All right, Gary, let us hear your story now. Come on.
Well, here is a miracle story. This one.
I'm not leaving.
Okay. This is a story that happened to a man I know and I'm friendly with. His name is... He told me the story. It's about his son. His name is Norm Don, and he is a Bible lover from Chicago. And I have to preface something by saying that just who I am, it's hard for me to believe the different miracle stories that people say, whether it's here or that, you know, things like, I saw Baba told me to do this, whatever. Anything that is in the supernatural aspect of Meher Baba is very hard for me to believe. I believe the people who say it, they believe it's true, but let's say just from a rational, scientific perspective, did this event really happen? I doubt that. That's a generality, but now I'm going to tell this story. 2 years ago, I was back in the United States, and I stay with my family in Chicago. And I go to the Baba meetings in Chicago. And on one of the visits there, I met Norm and just started catching up with him. So what are you doing? You're working. He moved his house. And he's a man. He's about in his mid-50s. And I just remembered in conversation as we were talking that I had not seen his kids. I'm living here now almost 12 years, so this is about 10, 11 years that passed, and I had not seen his kids since they were small children, actually since they were like 9, 10 years old. He has two boys. And I thought, hey, so how are your kids now? You know, they're like in their 20s now, these guys, and it just, you know, I hadn't seen them, and they've grown up, what are they doing? And he told me this story. He said while he was working on the south side of Chicago, Norm Don, he works in biofeedback, without going into that, but he was doing research at the University of Chicago, which is one of the leading universities in the United States, but it's sort of an island of like intellectualism and students, but that island is swimming in a sea of like tough neighborhood, mostly black ghetto in the city of Chicago. And his kids grew up there on that island, figuratively speaking. It's just a little enclave. And he said they grew up, and it's a nice neighborhood, but you don't venture out of the parameters of that neighborhood. Well, his son, when he was going to high school, became friendly with, and then a girl from one of the black projects, not black projects, she's black, and one of the projects means low-income housing in Chicago, she became his girlfriend. And he said he was so naive that they'd go out on a date, and he'd bring her home late at night to just say, okay, good night, you know, just chaperone her. And he said he was so innocent that he didn't even feel that he should not be in that neighborhood. He did not feel threatened or afraid. And this went on for some time, even though he would be outwardly threatened and told by people, hey, you don't come into our neighborhood, and abused, or say, here's this white guy, get him out of here, what are you doing here? I mean, in strong language. He just continued to see the girl, and they were dating, and it culminated in this event, where after going out on a date with this young lady, he brought her back late evening night, and there's a bunch of guys just hanging out outside the project, And they started just roughing him up a little bit and just saying, how many times did we tell you not to come around here? What are you doing? What are you taking this girl out for? And just jibing him and pushing him around until finally one of the guys, and I mean, as he told me the story, he was narrating it with much more, you know, in the language or swear words. I mean, it's just, it's very violent. I'm trying to make it a little toned down here. And one of the guys says, I told you never to come here, you son of a bitch. I'm going to kill you for coming here. And he took out a gun and put it to this kid's mouth, and he shot him. And he shot him in the mouth, and the kid dropped to the ground, and somebody said, he's still alive. And there's a lot of people, including this girlfriend, who witnessed this. I mean, there are people, you know, it's like, some, I guess, wanted to participate in this violence, and some didn't want any part of it. But somebody said, hey, he's still alive. And he goes, I'll finish him off. And he takes the gun as this young man is laying on the ground, and just, the guy said, fired three shots into his back. He was face down on the ground. Well, in this boy's terms, what happened is that as he was shot, and he was shot in the mouth, and there was reconstructive surgery done, and he is, still has some problems, but they said he's very lucky because if the bullet was just a half inch or less lower, if it hit the teeth, all of the teeth would have exploded and it would just be like a grenade shrapnel inside of his head, and he would have just died from that. But it just, the way it went through, he needed reconstructive surgery. But what happened is, there was no bullets in his back. And the way he relates the story is, after he was shot and he dropped and he thought he was dying, Baba came to him, Meher Baba, and in his words, took him out of space and time. That as he lifted him out, he saw the man come with the gun, and I mean, this is not, this is beyond close range. This is a guy standing right over the top of you. It's not like, oh, he shot, but he missed. This is just a guy standing right over him. When he fired those three shots at the boy, when he was rushed to the hospital, you know, when the ambulances came, there was a shooting, and there was not a bullet in his body. And he says he saw it as Baba lifted him out. The man takes three shots at the body, whatever he's seeing with, you know, whatever that is, he's seeing his own body being shot at. But there was no physical bullets in the body. And it was one of those stories when Norm, who I've known for a number of years, it's funny, just a few weeks ago I saw him right before coming back on this trip, and I told him that once in a while Arish asked me to tell this story on my way home. I said I did. And I went over it again because I want to make sure that I had all of the details correct. And this is just personal to me. When I heard that, for whatever reason, it wasn't even the boy, but it was the son, the father who was telling me, I believed that. It was just instantly it registered in me that, yeah, this is true. This happened. That this is not just some imaginary thing. And the boy is alive. He's doing well. He's working. I mean, the only postscript I have to the story is that the father felt, took on some of the burden on himself by saying, he told me now that, really speaking, I was too naive to just to live in that neighborhood and think that everything's going to be fine for my family and all that. But is, well, you can't say extremely, it's beyond expression of words, thankful to Meher Baba that he pulled his son out.
No bullets,
there was, the back, the body was not touched by any other bullets. And when they took the police reports and everything like that, you know, they said, four shots were fired, and yeah, that it just it did not penetrate.
So you believe that?
I believe that.
So Kleiner's good by story, huh?
Maybe there's a rational
reason. Florence, I believe in bullets.
What about the girl? What about the girl?
The lady?
No. The girl?
Yeah,
the girl.
Oh, how did
he marry that girl?
No.
No. No.
No. I know the answer, Gary. Somebody substituted blanks for the cartridges.
I don't know, still
too, but it couldn't be because he didn't take the gun and hit him through the mouth.
And the girlfriend would have anything to do with it because he didn't die.
But somebody who you know is very practical down to earth, having something happen that you know is different.
It depends tremendously on who it comes from. Yeah, really.
It does seem to be whether it's no. It could be real.
Or not.